NATO at 75.
Today, NATO is more powerful than ever. 32 nations strong.
Europe is back in the space launch business.
3, 2, 1, top. Allumage 2 SR, décollage.
And there's a little bit of Paris in each Olympic medal.
Yes, we would like the athletes to bring home two different things. I mean, the first one, of course, is gold, silver, and bronze. And concerning France, I mean, our main asset is the Eiffel Tower. And we tried and we succeeded.
Today is Wednesday, July 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
Mr. Secretary General, leaders of NATO countries, foreign and defense ministers, representatives from partner nations and the European Union, and members of Congress, distinguished guests, welcome. Welcome to the 2024 NATO summit.
On April 4th, 1949, the North Atlantic Treaty was signed in Washington by the 12 founding members. On Tuesday, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, now with 32 member states, is back in Washington to celebrate its 75th year.
To look back with pride at all we've achieved and look ahead to our shared future with strength and with resolve. Together, we rebuilt Europe from the ruins of war, held high the torch of liberty during long decades of the Cold War. When former adversaries became fellow democracies, we welcomed them into the alliance. When war broke out in the Balkans, we intervened to restore peace and stop ethnic cleansing. And when the United States was attacked on September 11th, our NATO allies, all of you, stood with us, invoking Article 5 for the first time in NATO history, treating an attack on us as an attack on all of us. A breathtaking display of friendship that the American people will never, ever, ever forget.
Attending for the first time, newly elected British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, who said on Tuesday he remained committed to increasing British defense spending to 2.5% of GDP.
Today, in tomorrow and the next day, is all about standing together with our allies, discussing practically how we provide further support for Ukraine, and send a very, very clear message to Putin that we will stand against Russian aggression wherever it is in the world.
NATO has a lot on its plate, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the alliance while confronting the prospect of the return of NATO skeptic Donald Trump to the White House, the continuing Russian war in Ukraine, and a bigger global role. So let's dig in. Joining us now to talk about it is Charles Kupchan, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and professor of international affairs at Georgetown University. Big picture, what do they want to do at this NATO summit?
I think the big picture is to send a message to Ukraine that all 32 members are prepared to stand by Ukraine for as long as it takes to rebuff Russia's effort to subjugate the country. And that's an important message for Ukrainians who at this point are struggling with continued loss of life, destruction, absence of basic utilities and electricity. And it's an important message to the Russians, because I think Putin's strategy is to try to wait out the West here and ultimately turn Ukraine into a failed state, if not defeat Ukraine outright. So NATO is really trying to play the long game here to send a message to Ukrainians and Russians alike that they're in this for the long haul and that they're going to see it through.
The issue of President Biden and the upcoming U.S. election, is that, do you think, on the other NATO members' minds?
It is inescapably on their minds. I doubt it will see the light of day in public conversations. And that's in part because Biden will make up his own mind about whether he is going to stay in the race. And for now, he intends to be the Democratic candidate. Is there anxiety among allies? You bet. Was there anxiety before Biden's halting performance in the debate? Yes, but the anxiety has only increased. And you're already beginning to see a conversation in Europe about what happens to NATO if Trump is reelected, what happens to the American commitment to Ukraine if Trump is reelected. But these are all hypotheticals at this point. And as a consequence, I think the conversations in Washington will focus very much on getting aid to Ukraine, making sure that there is a glide path that extends over multiple years. And yes, there is some Trump-proofing going on in the sense that a new NATO post is going to be created to try to oversee the flow of aid. A decision was recently made at the G7 to tap frozen Russian assets to get assistance to Ukraine. These steps are in part about making sure that the aid continues to flow, even if there is a new American president.
And also, haven't most of the other NATO members consciously increased the amount of money that they're spending on defense to reach the 2.5 or above?
Yes, and that's a trajectory that really goes back to the initial Russian invasion in 2014. That's when President Obama at the Wales NATO summit twisted arms and got NATO members to commit to spend 2% of GDP on defense by now. Then you had the full-scale Russian invasion in 2022, which I think has created an unprecedented sense of existential fear in Europe. And in between, you had Trump twisting arms. Trump basically saying, you Europeans, you're laggards, you're relying too heavily on the United States, you need to do more to shoulder your share fair of defense. And so the Europeans have heard the appeals from Obama to Trump to Biden. They are now, many of them, meeting that 2% benchmark. And that's why I think even if Trump is elected, he is not going to dismantle the Atlantic Alliance, in part because many Europeans have, in fact, stepped up to the plate. Europe is sharing the burden in a way that it was not a few short years ago.
And I just wanted to just close and take a minute to just marvel a bit at the fact that this alliance is 75 years old. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. And I think it's easy to overlook the longevity and durability of NATO. Most alliances disappear when the threat that led to their creation dissolves. But NATO's an exception. The Soviet Union imploded in the early 1990s. NATO, instead of closing shop, took in new members, took on missions in the Balkans, in Afghanistan, in the counter-Islamic State campaign in the Middle East. And now it's back in business as a traditional collective defense organization, in some ways stronger than it's ever been. Because during the Cold War, I think there was a sense of normalcy. There was, yes, there was concern about the Soviet threat. We were all told about what to do if there is a nuclear alarm. We all run to the cellar or we get under our school desks. But this was all pretty theoretical. Now there is a hot war going on in Ukraine, the biggest land war in Europe since World War II. And that really has increased the salience and the political appeal of NATO on both sides of the Atlantic. So there is much to celebrate at this 75th anniversary. I think in some ways the irony is that, you know, NATO, when it comes to dealing with external threats, appears to be rock solid. the one thing that none of us expected is the internal threat to the West, that internal threat posed by democratic dysfunction, polarization, the fear of a liberal populism. We're now in a situation in which every time there is an election, everyone holds their breath, whether it's the US, the UK, France, Italy, because we're worried about what's happening to the political center. And so in that respect, there's a lot to celebrate at this 75th anniversary, but there's a lot to worry about. And in some respects, the more urgent issues for the West aren't about the Russian threat. They aren't about the Chinese threat. They're about getting liberal democracies back up on their feet, restoring faith in democratic institutions, and making sure that NATO is rock solid, not just when it comes to meeting external threats, but also when it comes to reanimating and revitalizing the foundations of liberal democracy.
Charles, thank you so much for the perspective and the time.
Happy to join you. Take care.
Charles Kupchan, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and professor of international affairs at Georgetown University. A number of casualties were brought to the hospital in Deir al-Balah after an Israeli strike at a house in central Gaza on Tuesday night. This follows a heavy Israeli bombardment that shook Gaza City. Thousands of fleeing Palestinians are searching for shelter while medical facilities have been forced to shut down. Israel's new ground assault in Gaza's largest city is the latest effort to battle Hamas militants regrouping in areas the army previously had said had been largely cleared. One fleeing resident said the buildings were destroyed, the roads were destroyed, all has become rubble. We're following these other stories from around the world. The United States has disrupted a Russian disinformation campaign involving artificial intelligence-powered bots used to create fake profiles on the social media platform X. All this is according to the U.S. Justice Department, which seized two internet domains and searched 968 social media accounts that Russian operatives allegedly used to create an artificial intelligence bot farm and peddle disinformation in the United States and other countries, according to the department. Hundreds of newly elected lawmakers gathered in Britain's parliament after the election that brought a Labour government to power. Among the 650 members of the House of Commons, 335 are arriving for the very first time. Brazil's federal police allege former President Jair Bolsonaro embezzled jewelry worth about $1.2 million during his time in office. That's according to a report on the investigation that was unsealed Monday by the Brazilian Supreme Court. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, U.S. lawmakers returned to the nation's capital for the first time this week after President Joe Biden's poor debate performance against presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump late last month. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on the calls from Capitol Hill for Biden to step aside.
U.S. President Joe Biden facing questions from within his own party this week as lawmakers return to Washington and concerns that Biden's poor debate performance will quash his chances to beat Donald Trump in the November general election.
He just has to step down because he can't win.
Representative Mike Quigley, one of a handful of House and Senate Democrats who have publicly expressed concerns that Biden has not made the case he is healthy enough to serve another 4 years. But the majority of Democrats still pledge their support, like Representative Peter Aguilar of California.
President Biden is the nominee, and we support the Democratic nominee that will be Donald Trump. That is a fact.
The White House said Biden's debate performance was a temporary misstep. Karine Jean-Pierre is the White House press secretary.
He had a bad night. We've talked about it. He understands people's concerns. We have been out there, as we have been, in previous months. You see from his engagement with everyday people on the ground.
One analyst told VOA that lawmakers aren't the only ones Biden needs to win over. Casey Burgat is the director of the Legislative Affairs Program at the George Washington University.
He needs to hear their concerns. He needs to be honest with them about where he has liabilities and what his plan is to attack those liabilities. But he also has a PR problem with voters out there. It matters a lot that Democrats are sitting lawmakers are upset with their own candidate. But it matters more if voters don't see him as a viable option.
Top House Republicans said Tuesday administration officials should consider using a constitutional amendment that allows the vice president to remove an incapacitated president from office. Elise Stefanik is the chair of the House Republican Conference.
There is no longer any doubt that Joe Biden is unfit to be our commander-in-chief. The Biden White House, far-left House Democrats, and the mainstream media are in complete disarray because they know this to be true.
But with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer not wavering in his support,
I'm with Joe.
The scenario of replacing Biden with Vice President Kamala Harris as the nominee is still unlikely.
This is probably the most significant election of our lifetime.
Democrats will formally appoint their nominee at their convention in mid-August. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
A company has installed computerized vending machines to sell ammunition in grocery stores in Alabama, Oklahoma, and Texas, allowing people to pick up bullets along with a gallon of milk. American Rounds said their machines use an identification scanner and facial recognition software to verify the purchaser's age and are as quick and easy to use as a computer tablet. But advocates worry that selling bullets out of vending machines will lead to more shootings in the U.S., where gun violence killed at least 33 people on Independence Day alone. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
3, 2, 1, top! Allumage 2SR, décollage.
Europe's Ariane 6 launcher blast off on a debut flight on Tuesday, restoring the continent's independent access to space after delays, political setbacks, and debates over funding. The chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve spoke to Congress and suggested interest rate cuts for the United States may be getting closer.
The Fed's benchmark rate is at a two-decade high as the central bank keeps fighting inflation.
Over the past 2 years, the economy has made considerable progress.
But at the same time,
elevated inflation is not the only risk we face.
Chair Jerome Powell tells a Senate panel the Fed is also facing a cooling job market, and cutting rates by too little or too late could hurt economic activity and employment. While that suggests the Fed is nearing a move to cut rates, Powell did not say what Wall Street investors are anxious to hear, any strong indication of when cuts might start. Economists expect they will begin at the Fed's September meeting. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
We've told you a couple of stories recently about how climate change is melting ice and permafrost and revealing thousands-year-old animals or dinosaur remains. Now, Peruvian police and mountain rescue workers recovered the body of an American climber who went missing in 2002 as glaciers in Peru's highest mountain and surrounding area continue to melt. Along with the mummified skeletal remains, searchers also found well-preserved climbing boots and clothing, as well as a driver's license and passport, beginning to William Stamfel. Stamfel suspected to have died in an avalanche more than 20 years ago. India, on Friday, launched the world's first compressed natural gas-powered motorcycle. The motorcycle, named Freedom 125, was designed by India-based manufacturer Bajaj Auto and unveiled by Indian Transport Minister Nitin Gadkari.
The cost is coming something 2 rupees 25 paisa. And for this CNG vehicle, the cost is coming nearly 1 rupees per kilometer. That is to be great saving. I am really happy about it. It is going to save not only pollution, but it is going to save our imports.
Pollution is a growing problem across India. Attempts to cut vehicular emissions, reduce fuel imports, and curb stubble burning have not yielded great results in a country where the proposed coal power capacity is the highest after China. And finally,
Paris 2024 et LVMH sont fiers de vous présenter les médailles des Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques de Paris 2024.
In Paris, the Olympic medals were unveiled. The gold, silver, and bronze awards for Olympic athletes won't just have those precious medals in them, but a bit of Paris as well. The medals are set with hexagon-shaped tokens forged out of scrap metal from the Eiffel Tower.
Yes, we would like the athletes to bring home two different things. I mean, the first one, of course, is gold, silver, and bronze, which is the ultimate success in terms of sport and concerning Olympic and Paralympic Games. And to add to that, an added value, but an added value which is at the same level than, of course, gold. And concerning France, I mean, our main asset is the Eiffel Tower, and we tried and we succeed that they can bring them home gold and Eiffel Tower, which is the best we can do for them.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. You can also download our apps from Apple and Google. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There's an expectation, both from the American people and from people around the world, that we'll do everything we can to manage what is arguably the most complex and consequential relationship of any in the world, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken, speaking of U.S.-China relations.
It means being very clear and standing up effectively to the areas where we have profound disagreements and would take the world in different directions. And that's what we've done. It also means trying to find, wherever we can, areas of cooperation where it's clearly in the interests of our people, Chinese people, people around the world, for us to cooperate.
One promising area of cooperation with China is an effort to counter the flow into the United States of fentanyl and other synthetic drugs and their precursors, Secretary Blinken said.
In terms of putting forward new regulations, in terms of taking down some of the companies that were illicitly engaged in the diversion of these precursors, these ingredients for fentanyl, prosecuting people who were engaged in this practice, setting up a working group with us to try to make sure that we're focused on it day in, day out. That's happened, and that's good. That's progress.
Secretary Blinken underscored the United States is also clear-eyed and determined about the areas of competition and contestation with China.
Over time, over the coming decades, they would like to be the leading country, the dominant country in the international system, militarily, economically, diplomatically. And if their vision for the world actually matched ours or matched many other countries, that would be one thing. But they have a different vision of what that future looks like. And so we disagree, and we're going to compete very vigorously to make sure that we're the ones who are effectively shaping that future.
Among China's current policies causing deep concern, Secretary Blinken cited the economic challenge caused by China's overcapacity, its attempt to flood markets in critical sectors, unfairly wiping out competition. He also cited the security challenge caused by Beijing's investment in Russia's defense industrial base in ways that allow Putin to continue his aggression against Ukraine. The bottom line is that the United States must be prepared to act on each area of its relationship with China, said Secretary Blinken. The competition, the contestation, the cooperation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.